The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
Torah Way North West London, Sunday the 6th of December, Chof Kislev Tov Shir Pei Aleph, or Rav Yoni Berenbaum, Alexander the Great, and the background to Hanukkah.
Okay, good morning. So thank you for inviting me here this morning. I'd like to share with you some perspective on Hanukkah, which really predominantly involves the setting pre-Hanukkah, the background to Hanukkah, in the sense of going into an area of Hanukkah which really exists around 100 years before the Hanukkah story itself takes place, but I think is incredibly important to understanding the essence of what Hanukkah is. We're aware of the fact that the very fact that there is so little in the Gemara about Hanukkah especially means that that understanding the essence of Hanukkah is more important perhaps than any other Yom Tov, because there is so little to draw on in terms of the formal sugya in the Gemara. And therefore, to fully understand it, it needs a lot of work, it needs a lot of understanding, it needs depth, it needs consideration of exactly what the essence of the Yom Tov is. And begins with the Gemara in Megillah Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara says the following thing, Tana. I did not despise them. The Gemara is going through the whole introduction it's part of the Gemara where the Gemara discusses in detail Megillas Esther. Lo ma'astim, I did not despise you b'mei kastim, in the days of the kastim, the Babylonians, the Bavliim. Shemazdi lahem Doniel, Chanani, Mishael v'Azariah. I set up for them Doniel, Chanani, Mishael v'Azariah. Lo ga'altim, I do not reject you, b'mei Yevonim, in the days of the Yevonim, of the Greeks. Shehem asti lohem Shimon HaTzadik, I set up for them Shimon HaTzadik, the Chashmonoi Yevonov, the Chashmonoi and his sons, u'matis yokoen godol. Then the Gemara goes on to talk about, the Brisa carries on to talk about, Chalosim b'mei Homon, Shrazim Odesha v'Esther, to destroy them, that I didn't allow them to be destroyed, that was in the days of Homon, where I established for them Mordechai and Esther. And the Gemara carries on in that vein. The question here is why does the Gemara make a mention at all of Shimon HaTzadik in this context? What is the connection in terms of the Yevonim, in terms of the attack of the Yevonim on Klal Yisrael, that demands mention of Shimon HaTzadik? You know, the fact that the Gemara splits up Chashmonoi Yevonov and Matos Yochanan Godel is another question. There's a suggestion that Chashmonoi Yevonov was maybe Shimon ben Matisyahu, who actually founded the Chashmonai family. Okay, however you understand that division between Matisyahu and Godel and Chashmonai of Ono, fine. But Shimon HaTzadik lived around 100 years thereabout before the Hanukkah story, right? So what is the particular connection between that and the attack of the Yevonim? What it really demands an understanding of is the influence of Shimon HaTzadik and the connection of Shimon HaTzadik with Alexander the Great. And that's why the title of the talk is Alexander the Great in the background of Hanukkah. The most famous Gemara about Alexander the Great, probably, is the Gemara in Yuma. Gemara in Yuma is Samach Tes Amud Aleph. The Gemara says in Yuma, tells us the following story. The Gemara says, the sugi of the Gemara is about actually going out of the Beis HaMikdash wearing the big day kahuna. Because as in the story reveals, that in fact, it details that Shimon HaTzadik seems to have left to go out of the Beis HaMikdash wearing the big day kahuna. That's what the Gemara is discussing. The Gemara says, describe Esher B'chamesh B'Teves, the 25th of Teves is the Gemara, it's called Yom Har Grizim, Hudololim Hudololim Mispid. Yeah? This is one of the days listed, maybe Megillat Tanakh, but short, in order not to give her spadim, not to give eulogies. And what happened on that day? Yom Shavikshu Kutim as Beis Elokeinu Me'Alexandros Mogdon La'achrivoi. This was the day when the Kutim approached Alexander the Great and encouraged him to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. The Nidalem, and he agreed with them, he gave them permission, he agreed that this plan should be carried out. So they came and told Shimon HaTzadik. There's a threat, the terrible threat that was posed to the Beis HaMikdash. Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol. Ma also, what did he do? Lovash Bigdei Kohuna. He dressed himself in the Bigdei Kohuna. Benis Ateif Bigdei Kohuna. He wrapped himself in the Bigdei Kohuna. Umiakiri Yisrael Emoi. And the most prominent members of the Jewish people were with him. They had torches of fire in their hands. These were going from this direction, and these were going from this direction. Until daybreak. Once he got to daybreak, he said to them, who are these? They said to him, Yehudim Shemarduboch. They said to Alexander, they said, these are the Jews who are rebelling against you. Kimon Shegia La Antipras. Antipras was a town that was later developed, and extensively, I think that's when it received its name by Herod the Great, but it was a town between Caesarea and Yerushalayim, so they were going out from Yerushalayim in that direction. Kimon Shegia La Antipras, Zorchochama, the sun shone, Upoguze Bozeh, they encountered one another. Kimon Shirah Shimon HaTzadik, once he saw Shimon HaTzadik, Yoraz Mimarkavtoi, Alexander the Great descended from his chariot, Vishtachav Elefonov, he bowed down in front of him. Omrule, they said to him, Melech Godo Kamoscha Ishtachav Al Yehudi Zeh, you're great, such a great king, he's the emperor of the entire world, effectively, Alexander the Great at that time, the height of his power. He enters the Eretz Yisrael approximately, whether it's exactly this, the time of 332 BCE, the 4th century BCE, he's there, he's at the height of his power, conquering the world, and he says, there's such a great king, Yishtachav El Yehudi Zeh, should bow down to this Jew. Omer Lehem, he responded to them as follows, Demus Yokner Shal Zeh, Menetachas Lefonai Beveis Milchamti. Effectively he says, I don't know whether, it's strange to you that I'm bowing down to this Jew, but the reality is the image of this individual follows, goes in front of me in war. Menatzachas lefonai, almost leads to my victory, beveis milchamti, when I wage war. Omalami said to them, Loma Boston, why have you come? Omalami said, Esher beis b'ayishim espalalim b'olecha b'amalkuspa, the house in which they daven for you and your kingship. We daven for you. Shalot Echarev, it shouldn't be destroyed. Echarev should lead you and try and convince you in this terrible way to destroy it. And he carries on and says, who are these? Not me, Halalo, Ketim, Halalo, etc., etc. They reveal who it is, the people who have created this terrible plan, and eventually they meet a very nasty end. The question here is clear. How do we understand this Gemara? What exactly is going on? How can it be, what is the role here of Shimon HaTzadik specifically, the relationship between Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great? As I said, it's a very famous Gemara. We know that from this Gemara we learn the fact that, in fact, Alexander the Great left Yerushalayim. He didn't go near Yerushalayim. Didn't do any damage to Yerushalayim. And at the end of the day, though, the Gemara clearly needs a lot more understanding, needs further depth and to understand what exactly is going on here. So, when the Gemara talks about Shimon HaTzadik and his relationship with Alexander, it focuses specifically on the fact that Alexander the Great saw him in a sort of vision. So whenever he would go out to battle, it would be Shimon HaTzadik's face that he would see. And because of that, he leaves alone Yerushalayim. So, although we normally associate Alexander the Great with the man of battle, the man of war, he's a man who rises to incredible heights of power very, very quickly. He's a master tactician. He's able to conquer lands across the entire known world. What is equally important to understand is the fact that Alexander is only one part of the story in terms of the influence that Alexander the Great has. Because there is a military influence. There is the fact that that he creates this incredible empire and changes the face of the ancient world. But equally importantly, is he carries with him, both in a literal sense and also in the impact that he has, an entirely new philosophy, right? And they go hand in hand together, right? That effectively is the philosophy of Aristotle. Aristotle was appointed as a tutor to Alexander the Great. His father, Philip II, was king of Macedonia. He appointed Aristotle as a tutor over Alexander. And he made an incredible impression on him, to the extent that either there's a suggestion that he may have even accompanied him on his journeys, on his travels. But even if he didn't, certainly Alexander the Great carried Aristotle's works with him. He led to the whole philosophy. The philosophy of Aristotle was transported across all of the countries that Alexander the Great attacked, right? Because of the influence that Aristotle had on it. Aristotle's philosophy is transported across the world because of that connection. And when he conquers the world, he is taking Aristotle with him. Why is that significant? The reality is that Alexander the Great's empire is only very temporary, right? It only lasts in the form that it does for a relatively short period of time. We know that soon afterwards, after his death, there are competing interests, as normally with the case of great empires led by great leaders, and eventually they split up. So the time you get to, for example, the Hanukkah story, we know that mainly it is the Syrian Greeks, the Seleucid Empire, they are the ones who are really the ones who are the figures, Antiochus in the Hanukkah story, right? By that time, that great empire of Alexander the Great has already split into many different areas. But what has not happened is that the influence that he brought with him, that new philosophy, that what we call Chochmas Yavon, right, the wisdom of ancient Greece, that remains. And on the contrary, not only does it remain, it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. And we're all familiar with the fact that when we talk about the Hanukkah story, that is really the main focus. We talk about the fact that they were after the Ruchnius rather than the Gashmius. That's all the same thing. It was the influence of Chochmas Yavon which remains and becomes the driving force. And the biggest problem that we have once we get, as I said, 100 years later to the Hanukkah story itself. And that is driven by not only Aristotle, but he is the central figure. The two of them go together. You have the mentor, Aristotle, and you have the Talmud, the disciple, you have Alexander himself. What is important to recognize is that it's absolutely clear that this man, Aristotle, was both brilliant, right, brilliant, and also one of the most influential people in the wider world who's ever lived, right? That is the reality. So most of philosophy take their lead from him. Human knowledge, he's the founder of so many fields that are in scientific study, understanding, the way he approaches logic, zoology, everything else, future scientists, philosophers, everything else takes their lead from Aristotle to the extent that, you know, there are contemporary writers who basically say that he has influenced every branch, they say, of intellectual enterprise, ethical, political theory, everything, the whole lot. It's almost there are thousands of years under the influence of Aristotle himself. But what is also clear, when it comes to his direct influence also on Aristotle's, on Alexander the Great's campaign, that's also very significant. Alexander the Great, one of the most famous things that he was taught by Aristotle was to be, and this is the quote, a leader to the Greeks and a despot to the barbarians, to look after the former as after friends and relatives, and to deal with the latter as with beasts or plants. So in other words, his whole ideology, the way he approaches those he considers to be almost like subhuman, is based on that philosophy of Aristotle himself. Why is this all important? Why is this all significant? Because in addition to Aristotle clearly being of a brilliant mind, the Rambam also says that in terms of the human intellect, he had an incredible, incredible mind. We are also aware of the fact that he was a complete kofer. He was a complete heretic in the sense, and this is the quote from the Ramban in Vayikra, to Zion Pasuk Ches. The Ramban says, he refers to him like this, is Hayavoni Ashahikish Kol Dovar Zulosi Hamur Goshloi. He denied everything except that which he could sense. Everything was about the things that he could, that were observable phenomena. Anything that wasn't an observable phenomenon, for him was nothing, right? It had no significance at all. The Hegis Daitulak
Kol Halashon.
And he was of a haughty mind. He and his wicked disciples, that anything that he couldn't achieve through his own logic was simply untrue. So part of the essence of Aristotle's message and the influence that he had is that only that which is observable has truth to it. And anything which you can't observe and you can't prove in a physical sense cannot be true. And that was as much his legacy as anything else. So when we put that together with Alexander the Great's military conquest, and when we understand that Alexander the Great's military conquest is what's temporary, but what really lasts is the philosophical influence of his tutor, of Aristotle, and that philosophy being that there is nothing beyond that which is an observable phenomenon, we begin to understand the beginning of the significance to the connection between Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great. When Alexander the Great makes he admits and he exclaims with wonder that Shimon HaTzadik goes in front of me in war, what does that mean? What is the essence of that? I'll share with you what I think is an incredibly beautiful idea from Moshe Shapiro, who asks this question. And links it to an understanding of the essence of what Torah Sheba'al Peh is and how that relates specifically to Hanukkah. And we're familiar with the fact that of all the Yom Tov, Hanukkah is the Yom Tov of Torah Sheba'al Peh. That is the essence. It only belongs within Torah Sheba'al Peh. That's where it lives. That's where it exists. But I think he reveals here a deeper idea, which I think is incredibly powerful. It says like this. Torah Sheba'al Peh, by definition, contains within it a danger. And that is that it relies, by definition, on a sense of creativity, of innovation, in the sense of learning Torah. When we quote something B'Shem Omroi in Chazal, right? That means that was something, that was a maima, that was a statement, that was a halacha that they worked on, that they developed. Of course, it's all Torah Misinai. But by definition, Torah Sheba'al Peh involves an incredible effort of self-creativity. That's what it is by definition. Every time you quote something, you know, Bayan, Rav, whoever it is, it's something they've worked on to develop themselves. And that means, he says, that anyone who is learning, developing Torah Sheba'al Peh, till today, Torah Sheba'al Peh, there's always a risk of falling into the trap of believing that they themselves are the primary driver of this statement, right? That effectively it's their own invention. There's a danger that a person would come to think that they are almost they are the source of it. That the way they perceive things is the truth, right? That's the danger, because at the end of the day, it involves a creative process. It involves a chiddush, and once you're being mechadish, it's incredibly easy to fall into that trap of saying, I am the Mechadish, it's all me. And therefore, if I decide that it goes in this direction, well, let you go in that direction, because that's what I say the MS is. That's the concern. And that is the reason, says Ramosha Shapira, that the greatest challenge to Torah Sheba'al Peh is represented by Chochmas Yovan, by the Chochmah of Yovan, Greek wisdom, which we've sort of defined or encapsulated within the notion of Aristotle, even though, of course, that is not the only source, right? He's simply the primary and most prominent driver of it and is most closely connected to Hanukkah itself. And we know that from the Gemara as well. We know that this remained a continuous challenge. The Gemara is very, very, very concerned. We know that Mishnah, well, about Chochmas Yovan, about the notion of learning Chochmas Yovan. And sometimes you And sometimes you learn those sugyas and you think, you know, what's so bad? You know, what, chokhmah, it's incredible wisdom. What is so bad about it? But the challenge is because the essence of chokhmah siyavon, the essence of Greek wisdom, is the very notion that whatever I say is true, whatever is observable phenomena is true, and whatever isn't is not. And you see that it remained a constant challenge even to Chazal himself. Most famous of that is Chagiga, Daf Yudalad Omud Beis, where the Gemara describes the story of Acher, right? And the Gemara there says, Acher, who's one of the greatest Talmidei Chachomim we've ever known, my Acher, my, the Gemara says, Zemer Yevoni Lo Posak Mepume. Greek songs, it says, never left his mouth. When he stood on the base of Medrash, Habre Sifri Minin Notion Recheko. There were many heretical works that fell from his lap, right? What is the Gemara expressing here? Is that tragically he was led astray in this regard. Even for someone who was considered to be on the level of Rabbi Akiva, you know, is one of the four who enters the Pardes, as the Gemara there famously describes, right? On that level. Nevertheless, he has this challenge, which he sadly falls to, and many others stumble in the same direction as well. There's Rav Moshe like this. He says that when it comes to Torah Shabbat Al-Peh, the only way, if you like, the way Hashem designed Torah Shabbat Al-Peh, is that a person needs to work out the emes from within, from their own heart. But they have to also be able to always connect that to what we could call the absolute truth, right? The emes la'amito, the real truth, the full truth of the Torah. If there wasn't that creative spark, that idea of chiddush within Torah Shabbat Peh, then it wouldn't be Torah Shabbat Peh. It wouldn't exist. You have to have that ability to create, to innovate. But it always has to be connected to the upper world, to the Elom HaSolyonim, to Ruchnius, to spirituality, to the idea of real Emes, the Torah itself. And if you don't connect it in that way, then it's a very, very fine line of falling off the other side and going into Chochmah more generally, and to the idea of simply being able to create whatever one wants to, based on their own intuition, without connecting it to the Torah itself. Why? Well, how does this relate to Shimon HaTzadik? So Shimon HaTzadik, most significantly of all, is the very first Manda Omar. He's the very first one of Chazal quoted in the Mishnah, effectively, as being Mechadesh Divrei Torah of himself, right? So you look at the very beginning of Ovah, and you have Moshe Kibbol Torah, Mesinai, Mesar Yeshua, Yeshua Zekein, etc., etc., and the Nevi'im handed over to the Mosra L'Anshe Knesset HaGadolah. The Anshe Knesset say three things. Heimon Mishlosha Devarim, as we know, Mesud Madin, etc., etc. But the Anshe Knesset HaGadolah was still not yet one individual who solely represents the era of Chazal, right? Because Anshe Knesset HaGadolah, we know, are a crossover point. They have Nevi'im amongst them as well, right? They haven't yet completely moved into the era of Chazal alone. It's still partially in the era of Nevuah, which is a different story altogether. But Mishnah based, Shimon HaTzadik Hoya Mishiyorei Knesset HaGadolah. He was one of the remnants of the Kshorei Knesset HaGadolah, and then Hu Hoya Omer, he himself would say, Al Shlosha Devarim Hoylam Omeid Ala Torah Ala Voidah Ala Gminas Hasodah. He was the first one effectively recorded, if you follow the Masoret, the Shalsheles that is set out for us in Ovis, he's the first one quoted as saying his own words of Torah. In that sense, effectively, as an individual, he begins Torah Shabbat Peh. He opens Torah Shabbat Peh for us. And he is the one whose likeness goes in front of Alexander the Great in battle. Because Alexander the Great conquers the world in a military sense, a physical sense, but also, and more significantly, in a philosophical sense, in spreading a chokhmah, which is real chokhmah, which has tremendous depth within it. What challenges Alexander the Great, what challenges the chokhmah siyavon, is the chokhmah of the Torah. But the two have to exist side by side. Because if they don't exist side by side, says Rav Moshe Shapira, then you have done away with the whole notion of Bechira. The fact that it is so enticing, the fact that the Chochmas Yovan is so enticing, means that it has to be, if you like, there has to be the opportunity for Torah Shabbat Al Peh there as well. And in the reverse as well, if the light of Torah Shabbat Al Peh, if that notion of Chochmah of the Torah, and that ability to be Mechadish words of Torah, the joy, the beauty of Torah Shabbat Al Peh, if it didn't exist with something else that has depth, beauty within it, Yafte Elokim Liyefes, the beauty there is not just the physical beauty, the real beauty there is the Chochmah, is the wisdom of Yavon. That's what it does. That is the real beauty, which is genuinely beautiful. And indeed, we should never forget, we benefit from, without even knowing, in many different areas. As we said, the founder of modern, in so many ways, of many, many aspects of modern contemporary science, which we all benefit from. There is real Chochmah there. There is that Yofi there. Without, if that didn't exist, if that Chochmah Yom didn't exist, there would be no Bechira, because there would be no other way. Torah Shabbat Peh, it would be automatic. Everyone would automatically go after the Chochmah of the Torah. So, what comes? We know that the Gemara says also in Yuma there, in Yuma Samach Tes Omid Beis, the Gemara says that with the rise of Alexander the Great, you have the end of Nevuah, right? The end of the Nevi'im, effectively. It goes hand in hand. The Nevi'im, Chazal Davin for the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zorah to disappear. The Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zorah is no longer there, because that's the counterbalance when it comes to Nevuah. If you have a direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there has to be a tremendous Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zorah. Otherwise, again, there's no Bechira, right? Because again, those two have to balance as well. Otherwise, there's no free choice. When you move to the next stage, so that's why the Avodah Zorah goes, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zorah goes when Nevuah disappears. But then you have this idea of Chochmah now. And Chochmah must also be balanced. And it's balanced between Chochmas Yovan and the Chochmah of the Torah. They are pitted against each other in that way. If you didn't have someone, a Chochmah, that is so deep and meaningful to be able to challenge, if you like, in some way, the Chochmah of the Torah, of Torah Shabbat Peh, there would be no Bechira, there would be no free will. So what we have according to this, is a very deep understanding of what exactly Hanukkah is, in the sense that Hanukkah represents, we know, as the Yom Tov of Torah Shabbat Peh. But what it really is in that sense, is the representation of how the battle that exists between the Chochmas Yovan and the Chochmah of the Torah is always so finely balanced. It's a continuous struggle. It's a continuous challenge. The essence of Torah Shabbat Peh is the notion of B'Shem Omro, to be able to say and be mechadish something oneself in Torah. But that carries with it a danger. It carries with it the danger which is epitomized by the notion of a figure like Aristotle, Alexander the Great's mentor, where he was an incredible mechadish in Chochmah, but only, as the Ramban says, Chochmah, that is entirely observable phenomena that I say is there, that I say exists. That's the challenge that exists, the Torah Shabbat Peh. On Hanukkah, when we celebrate the Yom Tov of Hanukkah, that Yom Tov of Torah Shabbat Peh, what we're really doing is we're saying we take the essence of Chochmah, we acknowledge the importance of Chochmah, but only Chochmah which has a connection to the Olam HaSoelyonim. It is the Chochmah, which is the vision of Alexander the Great himself seeing the image of Shimon HaTzadik proceed to perform in battle. It's the acknowledgement of an understanding that it was almost like a revelation to him, that even though he was tutored by this man, by this figure, this Aristotle, who himself was incredibly wise, but there's a realization there that there's something else here which balances that Chochmas Yavon and exceeds it. Exceeds it because it has that upper and that higher connection. That is what Hanukkah is. that is the essence of Hanukkah, and with understanding that story of Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great properly, we understand both the balance between them and how Hanukkah is a celebration of overcoming in the best possible way through the Torah that the negative trait of Chochmas Yavam.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the Rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.